Finally, we have, I guess, our token male on the polygamy platform. As Richard Dutcher, independent filmmaker. His credits include God's Army, Brigham City, and the recently released God's Army 2, States of Grace. He and his wife have six now. Five and one on the way? Five and one on the way. So, Ann?
Well, I'm really glad to be here to talk about this very unique series, episodes. Just for my own information and for everybody else that's here, how many of you have seen at least one or two episodes of Big Love? All right. Then you know whereof I speak. It's really been amazing to us of the polygamous culture that a show on this subject would be so successful. I understand there were about 4 million average viewers per episode of the 12 in this first season, and that has been picked up for a second season. It was interesting because when they first started advertising this, Principal Voices, who was Mary and I and a couple of other girls, were deluged with phone calls. What do you think about this upcoming show? Well, we couldn't really say very much until after we'd seen it. The first episode was premiered with the Tribune staff, and it had some real sexy scenes in it, and we were a little embarrassed over that. But when the second episode came out, we interviewed with a New York Times reporter who flew out here and invited us down to a motel room to view that with her, and there were five of us in the audience, and most of the time we had our hands over our eyes. And we were so embarrassed. I mean, we're talking about women, basically, and I'm using a generality here, that have high standards in morality, and we don't even have HBO in our homes. And then we sit down and watch a show that has intimate sex scenes that just are really embarrassing to us. But I think the New York Times reporter got the message, and when she reported on it, she even had pictures of some of us with hands over our eyes. But to begin with, I'd like to show just the opening scenes of Big Love. This will refresh your memory, kind of set the stage for the panel. And then let's kind of analyze it at the end of these 2 or 3 minutes here. Kind of see what you think this means to you as it's showing. I was hoping by the time that my Sunstone presentation came around that I would hear from one of the co-writers or the public relations person as to what they had in mind when they designed and wrote this. But I did not hear back from them. So I'll give you my interpretation, and then maybe during the question and answer, if we have time, you can tell everybody what you think it might mean. But to begin with, you have Bill looking kind of heavenward. Well, to me, I'm giving this from my perspective, keep in mind. This is a sacred heavenly principle. So then he has each one of his wives joining him one at a time in the family in the order that they come into the family. They form a family circle, but you'll find they're skating on thin ice. They do have problems, just like any other monogamous family, but it separates them. Now, I'm not sure whether because of the problems in life they're separated or whether death has separated them for a time. And then you'll notice the next part, it goes into looking through the veils. It could be the veils of mortality to immortality, but nevertheless at the end, they must find each other because they're all sitting down having this candlelight dinner on top of the world. And if you remember the first episode, I think we're sitting on top of the world. The music actually played for the first episode. You'll also notice that there were three planets at the end, and that could be a characteristic of the 3 degrees of glory. And naturally, of course, they have to be sitting on the celestial kingdom. But anyway, that's kind of the way that I interpret it, and I'd be interested in other people's interpretations as well. Let's see, get this in order. We were pleased to learn from the writers and the producers that they actually used the magazine that I was a managing editor of, Mormon Focus, and our book, Voices in Harmony, as resource material. And we were glad for the reason that at least they had some positive information and not all the negative press that is out there so prevalently. And we had some comments from them on email that we read that were very favorable about the lifestyle in general, which we were pleased about. In fact, one of them referred to the magazine as a New Yorker for polygamous. Thought that was kind of a compliment. We've been often asked, well, what things did we like the most? What were realistic and so forth? I think my first answer to that would be the fact that it showed the diversity. You have in one segment of the culture an isolated community called Juniper Creek, and that, I think, was supposed to represent the Colorado City Hilldale area, although it doesn't do a really good job of representing it. But I think that is significant because it shows an isolated, strongly controlled community. Then on the other hand, you've got Bill Hendrickson with his three wives, and they each have separate homes in a very nice suburb. And they live out in society. And a lot of people, whether it's intentional or unintentional, they don't even know their polygamous family. And that's the way a lot of polygamists live. You may not recognize them as you see them in a movie or the grocery store or anything. They look like everybody else. So it's important to recognize the diversity. A while ago, I decided to do a survey on exactly, not exactly, but approximately how many fundamentalist Mormons there are. And that's kind of the umbrella term for those who at least believe in plural marriage. However, there's fewer than 50% of those that are actually living it. The largest group, if you've read the paper at all, you're familiar with the fundamentalist LDS church, and that is down in Colorado City, Hilldale, although it's spreading in other areas as well. They have about 8,000 to 10,000 people. The next largest group is the Apostolic United Brethren, or AUB, and they have about 7,500. And then you have Centennial Park, who separated from Colorado City in 1986. They have about 1,500. And then you have the Kingstons, or Davis County Co-op, and they have about 1,500. Then there's a combination of several smaller groups, and they total approximately 1,500. So you've got a total of approximately 37,000 fundamentalist Mormons. It's important to realize the diversity that exists among that term. And the independent fundamentalists are about 15,000, and they do not belong to any organized group. That's what I consider myself to be, and Mary as well. So one of the things then that I liked about the show was that it did show the diversity. Another thing, I liked the humor that it brought out. In one case, you remember, I think it was the first episode, Nikki went to the car to open the door to get in the passenger side, and Barb comes along and jumps right in the front seat, and here's this woebegone look on Nikki's face, and she has to get in the back seat. And then there's, there were a couple others here I wanted to mention to you. Nikki says, I've got a family emergency. Now, Nikki's the second wife, and she has a shopping addiction, and her credit card is beyond the sky limits. And so she goes out with the pretext that there's a family emergency. She comes back in a little while carrying sacks from the Gap. And so Margene, the younger wife, says, well, what was the family emergency? Did somebody die at the Gap? And this is another one. The teenage daughter of Barbara, the first wife, works in a fast food place, and she makes friends with an LDS Orthodox girl, and they become pretty good friends. Well, along with them is working this very racy, you know, sexually minded young girl, and she makes some derogatory terms, and so the LDS Orthodox girl turns to her and says, I've upped my standards, now up yours. So anyway, that's another thing I like, is because, you know, we do, believe it or not, have a lot of humorous experiences in our family. Whoops. Just a minute. A case in point. I was supposed to turn it off. And that's probably a radio station because two of them were supposed to call us today. I apologize for that. Anyway, another humorous thing was, I probably better go on because in the interest of time. I think another thing that I liked about it is the reaction from other people as they saw the show. We didn't realize that polygamous families could be so normal. You know, and this is the message we like to get out, is really, we are so normal in so many ways. In fact, I don't know how many of you heard the session before this one, but it was the progress and the change of women's roles in the LDS Church in the last several years, and there's a conflict. Okay, should a woman stay home and raise her kids, or can she go out and have a career? Well, I got the solution for that, and it's have another wife. And one can have a career, and one can stay home and take care of the kids, you know? I mean, that's a practical way of looking at it. We try to look at it as a more of a religious belief type thing. But, you know, it's ironic that the church can solve that problem in a very easy way, but I'm sure they won't. It's interesting to see what some of the reviews have been. And just quickly, People magazine said it was the best new show of the year. And from what I understand, it is one of the five nominated for the one of the five best shows on TV. Wall Street Journal called Big Love sharp, seriously compelling drama. Washington Post described the series as adventurously outrageous. And Time termed it fascinating, first-rate drama. Yeah, that's pretty high praise on an episode or a series about polygamy. It's interesting to see what the producer, like there's two producers, Mark Olson and Will Sheffer, and they're co-writers, co-producers, and Mark Olson had this to say. He said they relied on a great magazine, the Mormon Focus, out there that was published for the polygamous community called Mormon Focus Magazine. And the first cover issue shows virtually the suburban integrated polygamous family, so it's not a complete concoction, it's not a fabrication. And so they kind of used that a little bit as some kind of an idea that, you know, women don't have to be the stereotypical hairstyles, long dresses, they dress to fit in with society in many cases. Barb, the first wife, had this to say, because it's really interesting to know what they say behind the scenes. She says, quote, "We're kind of a sisterhood on and off the set. I would love to be with these people for 6 years. Speaking of her character, Barb has to look at Nikki and Margene as co-wives. And then she goes on to say, a woman doesn't enter into that relationship without the agreement of other woman or women. She picked right up on that because that is the absolute suggested and preferable way of living this principle is to have the agreement of the whole family before you bring in another wife. Nikki, the second wife, quote, "After reading the pilot, I was so moved by it and I was fascinated by the character. I picked up the script at the agency and read it in the parking lot. I had the meeting the same day and we pretty much signed the deal. I started out loving my character, and by the end of the season, I hated her." And if you can relate to that, because her character is not a lovable character, but she plays it well. Margene, the third wife, in preparing for this show, she, quote, "actually came to understand that for many people, this is the answer to their problems. For many women, this is a lifestyle choice that offers companionship with other women and help for women raising children. I read essays by women that, quote, and the essays she read were from our book, quote, this is heaven. This is what gives them peace. For these women, polygamy, quote, is the answer to their emotional and religious needs. It will bowl over our audience and will educate them." And we feel like it really has, generally speaking, nationwide and worldwide. The show has gone in England and many foreign countries as well. I think it has changed their perception of the lifestyle. And then Bill, the father of the three, or the husband of the three, he says he hopes religious Americans will give this new show a chance before passing judgment. He says, in a way, this show talks about the freedom in this country. Well, how free are we? Are we free to choose who we want to live with? It becomes four people who are married to each other, four people who are adults, who decided to form a family unit, and it becomes kind of us against them. Then he goes on to say, there seems to be a lot of hypocrisy in some of our laws. It could be any secular group who has been persecuted all through the ages. Polygamy has been around since recorded time in every culture. And then in closing, I'd like to sum up how I feel by quoting two professional TV reviewers. The first one is Vince Horiyoshi from the Tribune, and he says about the show, quote, polygamists may snicker at certain over-dramatizations and blush at the frank sex scenes. In the end, Big Love is not so much about polygamy as it is about overcomplicated family structure and the need to spread the love evenly. And then Time Magazine says, you can analyze their intramarital alliances or disagree with their way of life, but you are never invited to laugh at them or doubt their sincerity. Right, wrong, or just weird, their family. Trying their hardest, Big Love, the series shows, is ultimately about quality, not quantity. Thank you very much.
Hi, I'm Mary Batchelor, and I work with Anne at Principal Voices. I actually was, like Anne, a plural wife. I was a second wife in a family with only two wives for 3 years, and the other wife left, and so now I'm the only wife. I occasionally come across polygamous families where they have many wives, and they often tell me what I really need more than anything else in the world is another wife. I'm like, well, I am really busy. I don't know if that would help or make me even more busy. But having been there, the experience, it's very interesting because when you talk to monogamous people, it's difficult to explain the dynamics of what it's really like. I mean, we have reporters asking us all the time, well, why? You know, how does it work? And I'm like, well, you kind of have to live it to understand, but since you're not going to do that, I'll do the best I can. But the show gives us a really good opportunity to kind of get inside the family life and to see some of the dynamics, albeit in a Hollywoodized version. But the amazing thing is a lot of people ask, the big question is, how realistic is this really? And I would say there's a lot of reality in it. There's a lot of make-believe in it, as in any circumstance you're going to find in any show on TV. I don't know any one particular family that would fit this model, but I know many circumstances in this show that actually do fit many of the families I know in different ways. I was planning to watch the show all over again this week, but I've actually been at Primary Children's Hospital with my daughter. She's doing well. Instead of Big Love and HBO, I got to watch the Disney Channel all week long. So I'm kind of G-rated today. But I did want to make some clarifications with Anne. This is really funny, but when we watched the first few episodes of Big Love with the Salt Lake Tribune, and it was my first exposure to HBO, and probably Anne's first exposure, and we were a little bit red-faced as we watched the show. But Anne and I had gone to see Brokeback Mountain. So, which was supposed to be a secret. And we're watching Salt Lake with the Salt Lake Tribune reporters and several other polygamists. And she says, well, that wasn't nearly as bad as Brokeback Mountain. And I'm like, don't you think, Mary? I don't know what you're talking about. Don't know what you mean. And the second episode when we were watching with the New York Times and the pictures came out, I'll have you know that my picture was this. But Anne's picture was this. Now that article came out while I was in school at the University of Utah, and the class that morning, my very first class, I'm walking into class and everyone's like this. You know, are you in the newspaper today? Like, oh, you mean this picture? How did you know that was me? But yes, and the first thing, this guy came over to me, and he had been a friend of mine through the whole class, but we had only met each other in class, and he said, how did you escape? How did you escape polygamy? I'm like, it was the funniest thing, and it took me about 10 minutes to actually explain to him, number one, I was never trapped, and number two, I never did escape. I actually still consider myself an independent fundamentalist Mormon, and I might actually live polygamy again, although when I do, I won't put my hair in braids or up in a bun and wear funny prairie dresses. But I have to, you know, I have to be careful when I say that, because I do have respect for those who choose to dress differently. And so I don't say that with any, you know, derogatory feelings at all. Now, but with regard to the show, it's been fun. Actually, I've really enjoyed the show. The first few episodes, not so much. I actually, the second episode, I was prepared to say, I'm never watching this ever again. I was just astonished with it. It was somewhat appalling. And I'm not even talking about the graphic sex. Yes, that's been a shock. But the idea that they would be noisily having sex to the audience of the entire family was very shocking. And in true plural marriages, that would never happen. And if it did happen, that would be the end of that family. It would be over. Because the women would not tolerate that for a second. And it showed true weakness on the part of the husband to permit something like that to occur. Clearly, this is something that is written by outsiders reflecting into the culture to try and come up with ideas to try and explain how these families work. And I'm fascinated watching it. I'm really fascinated watching how they are trying to perceive and understand polygamy from a perspective that it's just another kind of lifestyle, another form of family. Because in truth, that's how we see ourselves. We see ourselves as just another kind of family. And my kids, while we don't currently live in polygamy, we had five children from the other wife, and so we're now in a divorce situation. But the interesting dynamic of that is almost every kid on the block is from a divorced family. And so many of my children's friends have kids who have siblings from three different mothers and two different dads. Interesting. I mean, we live in a day and age now where we are dealing with many different kinds of families. And so ours is just one different dynamic. Specifically to the show, and we're talking how realistic is polygamy, is the show with regard to polygamy. One of the first comments I noticed in one of the articles was that it was written by a woman, and she was very indignant about it, and she said, come on, get real. These are Hollywood actors. Real polygamists are ugly. We have the magazine. These are real polygamists. They're very attractive people. Now, I wouldn't say all polygamists are attractive. I'm sure you've seen some on the news that you would take issue. This is a very attractive family, actually. And they did, the writers of the show did actually say that this was a model. They saw this magazine, and that gave them the idea to do a show about a contemporary, modern-looking polygamous family. And believe it or not, there are many out there. Many within the groups as well as outside of the groups look and act just like everybody else. When I was giving a talk to a Canadian audience, I let them know that, you know, a lot of times you might be in the store or in the movies, and people think, oh, I could recognize a polygamist in a heartbeat. But how many of you would recognize or pick me off the street or one of these gals off this magazine and say, that's a polygamist? We're everywhere. And I said to them, ooh. You know? You just don't know where we might be lurking. Now, some of the interesting questions that have come up, though, from the show is the head wife. Because clearly in the show, there is kind of a head wife, and Nikki resents it. And Nikki really kind of brings that out, and she's like, Barb's the boss wife, she calls her the boss wife, and then she refers to Margene as kind of a lesser wife, you know, like, well, I'm the second wife, and you have to obey me. And Margene was really indignant about that. And in real life, okay, yeah, there probably are some polygamous families that do have a head wife, but that's not considered the ideal, and I wouldn't think that's the norm. In real life, the family tries very hard to balance the relationships and keep the adults adults. And as you well know, adults don't want other adults telling them what to do and just say, strictly be obedient to me. So in many real life families, no wife is not going to put up with another wife telling her what to do or to be obedient to her. And the ones that work very healthy and that work very well have a camaraderie among the wives, and they do actually sit down and plan things. They might plan the schedule, they might not. Some families actually have specific rotations of evenings, some families don't. The interesting thing about polygamy is there is no one way. There's no one model. So the truth is, when you watch a show like this and you see the different families in this show, some of which are extremely weird characters, they're all different. They're very different characters in this show, and in real life, they're very different personalities in polygamy. You're going to find some bossy women, some bossy husbands, some meek personalities. You're going to find some dynamic ones, very passionate ones, outspoken ones, well-educated ones, and you're going to find the stereotypical ones, the ones that match the model of married at very young, taken out of school, had 8 kids by the time she was 30. So you are going to find the stereotypes as well as the not-so-stereotypical. The second wife, Nikki, brings in the manipulation and jealousy dynamic. I mean, you really see some of the things she does to manipulate, and those things are hurtful. And in a real family, those things would be very hurtful. She manipulates the wives into giving her extra time with the husband so that she can have a child when, in fact, she's just taking birth control, and misrepresenting her needs to the family. Those kinds of things would be very challenging in a real-life family. However, and I know that among plural families, the very first response to Nikki was, I hate her, and she better never find, I don't want anyone to find their way into my family that's like her. You know, she would be the stereotypical idea of the horror wife. That, of course, any polygamous woman or any woman facing polygamy would, that's the thing she fears right there. She'd be looking at her husband going, nah, you know. But there was a moment, and there are moments in the show, where Nikki shows true human kindness and compassion. And in truth, her character and the manipulations you can really see, they're very, very well written. Her character is very well done. I can understand she can be very dislikable, but in real life, we do actually have to deal with dislikable people, people who do come into our lives and who are difficult to deal with. And yet the family works very hard to try and incorporate Nikki and work with her. Now Margene, I could relate to Margene being a second wife and coming into a family. I was 20, came into a family with 3 children and 1 on the way. And I felt like a child. It was the weirdest feeling for me, and I see that same struggle that Margene has. I never felt like the overwhelm that she has. One of the episodes has her babysitting her children and some of the other children, and they're peeing on the floor and wiping mayonnaise in. It was just horrible. We all took one look at that and went, oh, ah, you know. And but the first thought I had was that was a little bit extreme, a little overdone, but probably realistic if she, from her background, coming outside of the culture, not maybe being around such a large family, might feel that. I grew up the oldest of 7 kids. I wasn't going to be overwhelmed by entering a family that already had 3 children. That was actually quite comfortable for me. Bill, as the husband, has been very interesting to also watch. We don't get to see many polygamous husbands publicly. We don't see them in the media. And frankly, there's a reason for that. I mean, they can be prosecuted. And the wives, we speak publicly a lot. I don't want my husband out there. He's working. He's supporting our family. I get to go to school and not have to work to do that. And so I don't want to put our family livelihood at risk. But this is a really good opportunity with Big Love to see a family where the husband is actually shown to be a sympathetic character, albeit imperfect, with flaws, which every, I don't know, married woman would say she probably recognizes some imperfections in her husband. That's probably not a unique thing. There are some questions, though, that I think have surfaced a lot. The affair. There's an episode entitled The Affair, but The Affair actually kind of lasts about 3 episodes. Barb and Bill sneak away at different times for intimate relations. And a lot of people have said that's really intriguing to them, because how do you cheat with your wife on your wife? How weird. And you know what? That was weird to us too. We never thought of it that way. And we never, you know, the way it's presented in the show is actually quite odd to us. It's really ironic and unique. But I would say that I liked it because I think it shows a good dose of healthy chemistry and some romance, the opportunity for the husband to take some time with each wife. And I actually thought he needed to spark it up and take off with each one of them. Don't just focus on her, go off with her too. Have some fun. And in fact, I really liked the episode that opened up where he was with Nikki, and then Margene came to the door. She accidentally walked in on them and was a little embarrassed, but she stepped out. He walks out of the bedroom with Nikki, kisses Margene on the lips, and walks on. I'm like, yes! That's what it is. And these families that we do have, I mean, some families, they don't have any open intimacy. I mean, they may not kiss each other in front of each other. But many families do, and they're very comfortable with that. And I just thought that was a neat aspect for the show to kind of reveal about that. My favorite episode was the finale. And it was, in fact, based on a real-life experience. Barb was nominated Mother of the Year back in 1999. Shauna Darger, who was a widow of a polygamist, was nominated for Mother of the Year. She was nominated by her children for building her own business after her husband died and supporting her children all on her own as a single mother. That was a huge feat. And she was, the organizers were informed after her name was announced in the paper that she had been a polygamist. Therefore, she should not be eligible to be Mother of the Year. Back then, the attitudes that were being thrown around publicly was, if you live polygamy, you are not a good parent. Period. You can't be a good father. You can't be a good mother if you're a polygamist. It's bad. It's wrong. It's criminal. Therefore, it's a bad example for children. But she voluntarily removed herself from the nominees, and it, of course, hit the papers. So that was reflected in the show, and I think it's been very interesting to see some of the headlines make their way into the show. The polygamy primer has been mentioned in the show. And there was a comment, of course, I would like, but there was a comment made by Bill with his partner that those crazy anti-polygamy wackos, or they're trying out to get us or something. And I just thought that was kind of cute. But there are some real life complexities that do get in there. My favorite moments are when the women actually have these touching bonding moments. And in the finale, when Barb was going to attend the ceremony, she had invited the women to come and be there, even though they could not be publicly acknowledged. And Nikki was offended at this. She says, we're all mothers in this family. I won't go. I will not go. And this hurt Barb, and Barb was going to go anyway. And Margene was going to go, and Margene talked to Nikki. And ultimately, the night that they were leaving, Nikki shows up in a very contemporary dress, which was a real stretch for her, to show her support for her sister wife, which was very personally touching for me. In fact, I cried. And it was ruined by the fact that the organizers did not send tickets to anyone but their immediate family. So the two women were not able to attend. And of course, those of us who watched the finale saw that the entire event ended up being frustrated and a humiliating and embarrassing experience for Barb. But it was one of my favorite episodes because they actually went the distance. In earlier episodes, they had moments where the women start to touch, start to have some real intimacy emotionally, and they backed away. And I was really disappointed with that. I thought, oh, they went 80%. If they just went 100% with the women, that would really show it. And to me, that's at the heart of polygamous families. That's at the heart of what is real, is when the women bond together, when the women have those moments together. Because in every marriage between a man and a woman, they're going to have that emotional intimacy. But in polygamy, the emotional intimacy must and should exist between the women for it to really work. And the families where they are successful, that's what you will see. Thank you.
According to Catherine Bell, who writes out of Ritual Studies, despite the fact that cultural symbols or imperatives or ideals, quote, can be very unclear to participants or interpreted by them in very dissimilar ways, end quote, such symbols still have the power to promote solidarity. By the use of the term symbol, I am by no means suggesting that polygamy is merely symbolic, meaning that it merely represents or points to something otherwise unseen or unknowable. Rather, as a practice, plural marriage wielded dynamic and efficacious power, meaning it had effect in the world, to knit families together forever and to facilitate their individual exaltation, even as it united early church members against hostile and aggressive outsiders, and as an indicator of loyalty, commitment, and obedience. Similarly, with the church's termination of the practice, Latter-day Saints huddled together against the symbol of their difference to begin their assimilation, rehabilitation, and transformation into quintessential Americans, to use Harold Bloom's term. The controversy over big love has revived my own interest in the ways in which plural marriage as a potent symbol both unites us as a religious people while simultaneously being the source of our greatest regret. And that's really interesting, isn't it? Here I want to suggest how I think the LDS response to the show that has most often been reported in the press embodies this cultural, social, and spiritual contradiction. First, it is important to note the trends in institutional church discourse on plural marriage, especially the church's statement on big love, and they did have an official statement to make. And then we can look at the discussion's development in the media to see, A, how the two compare, B, how polygamy operates symbolically today, and C, what some Mormons' articulation of their aversion to polygamy and polygamous in a form that curiously reminds me of the determined and diligent othering of anti-Mormon literature of the 19th century that has been pointed out in other sessions already this year, what that has to say about ourselves. I have argued to my students, some of whom complain that the issues I designate as current, I teach a course in current issues in Mormonism at Arizona State University, they argue, some of them, that some of these issues are not current, are not current, and in fact are not really important at all to the church or its members. And of course, polygamy is one of those things. So I argue to them in response that if you want to know what the LDS Church is concerned about, what its current issues are, you can look in two or three places, including the newsroom pages of its website. One glance reveals the church's persistent interest in and concern with polygamy simply by virtue of what it perceives as its need to respond to the press. The newsroom's comments on the news section is dedicated to correcting what the church perceives to be misinformation presented in media reports. And as of this, when I wrote this paper, I don't even remember when I wrote it, 9 out of the 21 statements from April 2006 back to September of 2002 are disclaimers about polygamy. Most of the LDS Church's references to plural marriage or polygamy are either in the context of tracing Mormon history, its public announcement in 1852, the persecution suffered, which the church calls the polygamy trials, and the manifesto discontinuing its practice. In addition, narratives of the frustration of mistaken identity and articles such as Neil E. Lambert and Richard A. Crackroft through Gentile eyes, 100 years of the Mormon in fiction. In 1971, the New Era published Arthur Henry King's A Testimony of My Conversion in the New Era, which compared Mormonism with Islam, with special reference to the social function of polygamy in Islam as providing a context for understanding and sympathizing with the LDS experience with the practice. Quote, the original social function of polygamy in Islam, that of providing status for spinsters and widows, helps an outsider to understand, sympathize with, and ultimately, as a member, accept the historical and eternal function of polygamy in the Latter-day Saint Church. It appears that it wasn't until the late 1980s or early 1990s that the tone of church discourse changed so that it was more specifically against polygamy as opposed to referring to it or defending its historical practice. In 1998, President Gordon B. Hinckley stated, quote, "This church has nothing whatsoever to do with those practicing polygamy. They are not members of this church. If any of our members are found to be practicing plural marriage," of course, you know, the distinction between plural marriage and polygamy, "they are excommunicated, the most serious penalty the church can impose. Not only are those so involved in direct violation of the civil law, they are in violation of the law of this church." One curious statement regarding plural marriage is this one from Dahlin H. Oaks in his article Timing from the Liahona in October of 2003. Quote, "We prepare in the way the Lord has directed. We hold ourselves in readiness to act on the Lord's timing. He will tell us when the time is right to take the next step. For now, we simply concentrate on our own assignments and on what we have been asked to do today. In this, we are also mindful of the Lord's assurance, 'I will hasten my work in its time,'" from the DNC. People who do not accept continuing revelation sometimes get into trouble by doing things too soon or too late or too long. The practice of plural marriage is an example." End quote. The most current LDS Church statement on its comments on the news, when I wrote this, comments on the news website, is its response to journalists' questions about its position on Big Love. In the series, quote, "In the series, set in a modern suburb of Salt Lake City, the main character keeps up a deceptive life in a fringe world of polygamy with his three wives and households," end quote. By characterizing the storyline as having to do with deception and pathologically marginal living as opposed to the sacred practices of a religious group deprived of its civil rights, we immediately know the church's position. The statement continues by voicing three main objections or concerns about the show. Its first, and presumably major, because it is first, objection is that polygamy is an illegal practice that has most often been associated with, quote, "persistent reports of emotional and physical child and wife abuse emanating from them. It will be regrettable if this program, by making polygamy the subject of entertainment, minimizes the seriousness of that problem and adds to the suffering of abuse victims," end quote. Rhetorically identifying polygamists as lawbreakers is a common strategy used by the church to distinguish apostates from LDS church members who, in contrast, are law-abiding citizens. While I think we may take at face value the church's stated objection to the topic as entertainment, that it, quote, "minimizes the seriousness of that problem and adds to the suffering of abuse victims," end quote, we might also hear in it a familiar argument that, according to church history and doctrine, plural marriage, like other sacred LDS practices, was restored and regulated by the Lord, and therefore an inappropriate subject for theater. In this sentence, we also hear concern over child abuse itself, a problem to which the church continues to have to face and respond. Similarly, it is easy to take at face value the third of the church's concerns about Big Love, the state of entertainment as a whole, much of which, quote, "shows an unhealthy preoccupation with sex, coarse humor, and foul language. It's, quote, essentially lazy and indulgent and useless nature, its inability to advance society or, quote, nourish great minds," end quote. Driving its point home, the church warns that, quote, "parents who are casual about their viewing habits," presumably meaning watching Big Love, quote, "ought to not be surprised if teaching moral choices and civic values to their children becomes harder as a result," end quote. This may also be read to say that watching Big Love and other shows like it will likely result in children being resistant to making moral choices or even rejecting important civic values. Linking their position to the 13th article of faith, the church invites, quote, "individuals and families to follow a higher road of decency, self-discipline, and integrity," end quote. All that said, my main concern here is with the church's second objection to Big Love as a form of entertainment. Quote, "confusion over the continued practice of polygamy." And this part of the statement is worth reading verbatim. The central characters, and this is a direct quote from their statement, "the central characters of Big Love are not Mormons, or more properly termed, Latter-day Saints. HBO has said the script makes it clear that members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints don't practice polygamy, still placing the series in Salt Lake, the international headquarters of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, is enough to blur the line between the modern church and the program's subject matter and to reinforce old and long outdated stereotypes. Polygamy was officially discontinued by the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in 1890. Any church member adopting the practice today is excommunicated. Groups that continue the practice in Utah and elsewhere have no association whatsoever with the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Most of their practitioners have never been among its members. Unfortunately, this distinction is lost on members of the public and even on some senior journalists. When ABC Network's Prime Time recently aired a program focused on the secretive polygamous community of Colorado City, the reporter repeatedly referred to members of the community as Mormon polygamists. In response, the church points to the Associated Press-style guide for journalists, which states, quote, "The term Mormon is not properly applied to the other churches that resulted from the split after Smith's death," end quote. In other words, the church continues to say, polygamous communities should never be referred to as Mormon polygamists or Mormon fundamentalists. And I don't know if you know this, but the church actually applied for a trademark on the term Mormon to be able to enforce then legally the use of that term. But I don't think that went anywhere. I don't know. Moderate and skillful, the statement doesn't demonize, which appears in stark contrast to journalists' accounts of the most common responses of mainstream members as either angry and or accusatory. The term that appears to describe how they feel about the show's discussion of plural marriage, its location in Salt Lake City, and its inclusion of scenes in the Salt Lake Temple and other Mormon landmarks and symbols is targeted. So they feel targeted. Lon Griffiths of the East Valley Tribune, Scottsdale, Arizona, writes about the LDS Church being, quote, this is the term she uses, dogged by scandals or controversies, and of, quote, defending itself from raw hostility, end quote. Like other articles about the show, Griffiths finds the Salt Lake City setting especially irksome, even insisting that, quote, HBO could have set up a fictional polygamous family in St. Louis with no allusions to the Mormon experience, end quote. So, yeah, right. Similarly, Scottsdale resident Pam Jones claims that HBO could have set the show in, quote, a rural Utah town where the polygamists really do live, end quote. Carolyn Warner, a political science professor at Arizona State University, argues that the show takes advantage of the church's history. Now, isn't that interesting? Takes advantage of the church's history. Quote, if they thought the idea of polygamy was one they wanted to explore for a TV show, why then did they pick a Muslim family because polygamy is allowed in Islam? Yeah, I mean, I've done a search on polygamy in Islam in scholarly, you know, like all the jillions of databases at Arizona State University, and I got two hits. And there's nothing in America, okay? I mean, there are Islamic, there are some Nation of Islam polygamists, but I mean, I found one article. So, I mean, you'd really be working hard to develop a show in America on polygamy and Islam. Good luck. An especially strident opinion letter written by Kevin Brady to the Salt Lake Tribune titled Be Honest About LDS Bashing reads, in part, the institutional grassroots concerns, oh, wait a minute, where is it? It's gone. I don't have it now. I'm sorry. It's gone. It's not in my paper anymore. Darn. So I can't read it to you. It was really nasty. Oh. I've got a new computer, and so I've lost parts of my paper, basically. In part, the institutional and grassroots concerns appear to derive from fear of how this will affect conversion rates. Though I have no evidence for it, it is possible that the church's marketing research found that memory of polygamy and its modern connection to those people is what drove the change in church discourse in the 1990s. For instance, in his article, Truth Prevailing, the Significance of the 19th Century LDS Experience in Britain, in the Ensign, Douglas F. Tobler points to the negative power of plural marriage had historically to evoke revulsion in those who might otherwise have joined the church. Newspapers and magazines continue to print an amazing litany of refusals to acknowledge the historical and theological connections between polygamists and Latter-day Saints, the most obvious of which is the church's statement. The strangest thing about the disavowal of kinship, at least in the context of the show, is that it has been accompanied by a concomitant insistence on accuracy. One of the first written complaints was from an inactive journalist who argued that Big Love's family gets it wrong because they hold hands when they pray. It escapes critics that while they insist that these people are not us, they want us to be authentic. I could go on forever about the futility of the church asserting ownership and proprietary use of the term Mormon. In fact, this obsession is usually at the heart of the church's objections in relation to virtually all public discourse on plural marriage, a persistence that I have to admit bewilders me. Or if we really do care about how others see us, how ridiculous we appear when we excise polygamy from our public histories, as if we were living not in the 21st century, but in the 8th, and we could really think we could get away with that. I feel equally adamant about what I consider to be my community's historic concern about so-called mistaken identities. The persistent question for me has been, what is this really about? If we're convinced, as convinced as we seem to be, that they're not us, then why do we care? Why? I think I found at least part of the answer when I began looking at the language used in an email campaign, which has had as its goal the show's cancellation. It didn't work. It has been renewed. This email campaign, you know, just kind of raged through the LDS community before the show ever started. And as the Salt Lake Tribune reports, the email complains that the show not only contains offensive, quote, parodies, but it also, quote, demeans and distorts sacred beliefs of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Is that not ironic? In addition, the unnamed author of the email is offended that the show includes, quote, talk of the celestial kingdom, free agency, and the choose the right slogan, end quote. In other words, the response to Big Love has, in my opinion, been driven by the fact that they are us. Or at least we continue to see ourselves in them, in their polygamous present. The Salt Lake Tribune quotes Patty Peterson of the Wellsville Seventh Ward as saying revealingly that she has, quote, absolutely no interest in watching Big Love because it has nothing to do with my life, end quote. She clearly has never had to beg for a cancellation of ceiling as I have. In other words, much of our criticism of the show actually refers directly to our desire to create and maintain a state of memorylessness about plural marriage. It appears to me that most of the statements and activist activity came from LDS women. Certainly most of the statements quoted in the press come from women, and the email campaign seems likely to be the product of women. As I noted earlier, plural marriage knit families together and indicated loyalty, obedience, and commitment. As a result of its importance and its function, early Mormon women could not hate it publicly. Now we can hate it with a vengeance. The LDS women who have been so unhappy with the show, now they can do what they see as being the church's work, and even as a protecting the church, while at the same time they get to protect themselves. Polygamists, I think, have become the new witches. Humanizes them, frightens us, because we do see ourselves in them. For my generation, Big Love reminds us of the number of times we heard over the pulpit, and I'm not alone. I mean, I talk to women of my age, and they've heard these things too. I mean, I was in Texas, I wasn't here. And I don't know how many times I heard over the pulpit that polygamy would be reinstituted, and that we might in our lifetimes be called to live it. Okay, I see nodded heads. Okay, now you men, you may not have heard that, but all the heads that I see, my husband will say, where did you hear this? And I'm like, I was sitting by you. You didn't need to hear it. It wasn't about you. You know, he'll say, I didn't hear that. Or, you know, I mean, I'll come up with all kinds of things. Yeah, I heard this over the pulpit. They say, I didn't hear that. We don't do that. And I'm like, yeah, I heard it. I heard it because I was listening for those things. We used to go on triple dates, my husband and I, with our friends in the ward, the bishop and his wife, and when we were young and younger. And we talked about this. This was a topic of dinner conversation with our friends. Who would you choose? How would you do it? How you know, if you had to choose someone. I mean, and my husband and I had talks about this alone. Who would you choose if you had to choose another wife? You know, he asked me the question. If you had to choose another husband, you know, to move in with us, who would you choose? And, you know, I'd say, well, who would you choose? And so this was a reality for us. And so Big Love to me is an emotion. Oh, I have my Big Love t-shirt on, by the way. Get it, HBO, $20. Over the internet. I cry at every episode because I see myself in those women. I especially cry there at that, when they play right at the very beginning, that scene. Oh yeah, to me, it's they're separated by death, they find each other, and they go to the celestial kingdom, and they're together forever. And that's what I wanted. I mean, we've gotten away in Mormonism from talking about becoming gods and having our own kingdom. I mean, I made all my major life decisions based on those beliefs. So anyway, the email campaign's died out. And Big Love shows up in the news now and again, but I don't hear Mormons talk about it. Most Mormons that I know haven't seen the show, and they don't have any desire to. But I think it's really, it's a beautiful show, and it really captures what a lot of my fears have been about most of my life in the church. And so I appreciate getting to talk about it.
Okay, let's see how much trouble I can get into today.
Sure.
I just think it's fitting. This is the second time I've spoken on this, and it's really interesting that every time they keep making me the only male on this panel. I'm wondering if they're doing that purposefully or what. But I really appreciated what these sisters have had to say. And I want to tell you just a little bit about my history of this show. Was when I was introduced to it, the first time I heard about it, I went, first of all, I was a little ticked off because it was like, what, HBO? And I got ticked off because I was working on a script about a Utah Mormon polygamist. And so the first thing was, I mean, it was still a few years out before I knew I'd get to make it. So my initial reaction was a little bit of jealousy. So I sat down at the computer and I start, you know, bring up the HBO site and they've got the trailer on there. And I start watching this trailer and I just start chuckling because I was so delighted by it. And so I watched it about six more times, just, this, you know, I can't believe this. So I go and I call my wife, and I'm like, get in here, you got to see this. You know, as we watch the trailer, I grab my kids, and it's like, get in here, you got to see this thing. And I was so interested in it that, you know, when I finally was able to see the first three episodes, the press, were two episodes, I guess they initially did the two episodes. And I honestly have to say that I was just, I get a lot of people saying constantly, you know, it's like, what do you think of Big Love? And they give me this look like they're expecting me to go off on it like I go off on, you know, Singles Ward or crap like that. And all I can say is like, I love it. You know, I love it. And it's like, what do you think of it? It's like, I want to direct it. Well, I wish they'd give me a call and let me direct this doggone thing because I really do enjoy it. And I can relate to it. In the sense that what I really appreciate about the show, and I want to be really quick because I want to leave you guys time to, I'm the person who has the least to say here today. So, but what I, my only criticisms of it are those minor little things where they have, you know, you guys don't mind the, I mean, you're not too wild about the sex scenes, but I'm always interested in a good love scene, so, you know, that doesn't bother me at all. But when the inaccuracies get going about the, you know, Palmyra instead of Palmyra, or Temple Recommend instead of Temple Recommend, and those minor things where I just wish they'd have a Latter-day Saint or a former Latter-day Saint or somebody on the set as a technical advisor just to help make it a little bit more authentic. But what I love about the show is the conversations that it starts, and what I love about it is the attention that it. I mean, just simply this, you know, the fact that we're here today talking about it, and that a lot of you who don't know really much about polygamy or don't have a lot of personal interaction with polygamists are here able to see Anne and Mary, who I've come to know over the past few years and just come to love as just wonderful people. And I every time I hear that they're on a radio show or a TV show, it just thrills me because I want people to know them. I want people to hear them. And I want people to become friends with them, as I have, because I think it's been a blessing in my life and will be for other people, too. The one thing that does annoy me about the show is not the show itself, but it annoys me that the Mormon community didn't produce the show. It's something, one of the motivations for my making the first God's Army movie was I was tired of the way that non-Mormons depicted Mormons, that they're always getting it wrong, is always inaccurate, it was usually false and offensive, and so I really push that idea that if we don't like the way that other people are defining us in society, then we had better get busy and start defining ourselves. And so I'm sad that somebody else is doing the job for us in that sense. I don't think we're working hard enough or doing enough to do this job ourselves. I think we're being lazy and let other people do it. And I also think it's like whenever I hear somebody complain, I just feel like saying, you have nothing to talk about. You know, you've had plenty of opportunity. How long have motion pictures been around? If you wanted to tell this story in a particular way, you've had plenty of time to do it. So, you know, be quiet. And the email campaign that goes out, I kept getting those, and so I would just sit down. As soon as I would get one of those, I would just sit down and say, you know, I refuse to participate because this is my favorite show on television, and it never nobody ever wrote back to me. So nobody ever wrote back and saying, really, what do you like about it? Because I could tell by the tone of some of the emails that the people had never even watched it.
Well, at least you got the email.
Really? Yeah. Here's a little just trivia. I don't know if any of you guys noticed, but if you were watching the finale of Big Love and the character, the actor who ushers them out of the building was actually the actor who played Elder Mangum in both the God's Army movies. And I got a big kick out of that. You know, it was like, you know, he's still playing a Mormon. It's like, you can't get away from it. So, and he's not a Mormon. I wanted to point out the DVD release of the first seasons next month. I was excited to see that. I would encourage those of you who haven't seen it to go either rent it or buy it. And I think also what annoys me is the conversation. What thrills me is, you know, when I grew up, my grandma would walk around the house talking about, you know, they'd talk about Andy and Barney and Opie like they were, you know, family members. And I get a kick out of the idea that maybe there's some families out there talking about Bill and Margene. And I just, you know, that tickles the death. I just love that. I just think that's wonderful. And the last thing I think I want to talk about, two things, is one, I was really annoyed when the church put out that statement about, you know, trying to kind of get people turned off of the show because they've never done that for one of my movies. And I really think that was the best marketing that I could possibly hope for. So I'm going to work a little harder on that next time. And the last thing I want to say is, two things. I was recently in a taxi cab, and I was in Canada. I was up there looking for some locations on a film. And I get in the taxi cab, and the cab driver, who looked like he was Middle Eastern descent, and he started talking to me. He was like, oh, where are you going? Going to the airport. Where are you going? You going home? Yeah, where do you live? Salt Lake City. Really, you a Mormon? He's like, yeah, I'm a Mormon. And then he looks up in the rearview mirror, and he's like, how many wives do you have? And I said, oh, I've only got one. And then he kept looking at me, and he goes, come on, how many wives do you have? And after about three times, he just went, gave me this look like, and then he just kind of winked and went back to driving, you know, which I thought was just hilarious. You know, it's just absolutely hilarious. But in defense of the show, I hate to hear people say that this story shouldn't be told, or basically any story shouldn't be told, because I don't think that's true. Just the fact that, you know, when I hear people complaining about the fact that it's shot in Salt Lake, it's like, this is happening. You know, people live this way. This is a depiction, an attempt at a depiction at something that's really going on. And so in that case, it's fair game. And again, if somebody doesn't like the conversation, if somebody doesn't like the cultural conversation that it's starting, if somebody doesn't feel that their voice is being heard, you know, hundreds of thousands of movie cameras are produced every year. They have ample opportunity to go do their own. So that's all I have to say. Thank you.
We have about 20 minutes, so if anybody has any comments or questions, please make your way to the microphone here so we can get you on the tape. Thank you.
All right, I've got to first say that I'm a big fan of Big Love, and a few things I really enjoy about the show is, one, even more than Seventh Heaven, I think is the best portrayal and sympathetic portrayal of a religious family on television right now, which I thought was really fascinating. And even more so, even though it's a polygamous Mormon family, I think it's the best presentation I've ever seen of a Mormon family on television. And my question deals more with, as you may or may not know, the writers and creators of Big Love are a gay couple. And so in a sense, you have an alternative family examining and portraying another alternative family. And I wanted your guys' comments on what you thought about that, and especially with the whole marriage debates and everything going on right now.
Mary and I have been very public, as some of you probably know, for the last few years, and one of the questions we get is that very question. What we are doing publicly is trying to explain the importance of equal civil rights. We're trying to leave religion out of it, so we're separating the two. We feel like the gay couples or the polygamous couples are all entitled to equal civil rights. We would like to see it decriminalized. Let's leave religion out of it. We feel like we already have those given to us by God. But we do need to step up and defend equal civil rights, and that applies to all lifestyles.
I'd like to add one comment to that, too. I actually think it's... I'm not surprised that it was a gay couple that took on this project, actually, because I think sometimes it takes somebody from an alternative view to be able to embrace or be willing to look at another alternative view in a positive way.
I'm a big fan of Big Love. I've seen all the episodes several times. So I was fascinated, Doe, with the quote that you gave from the church's website. I haven't looked at that, where they describe the lifestyle as deceptive, and that somehow this encourages this lying and so forth. I'm intrigued, and partly because, of course, in the show itself, if you haven't been a follower, the theme of lying and deception is something that goes in throughout the show, because, of course, if you are in a family system that is illegal, you do have to lie. You're forced to lie by the larger community. And I love what they do in the show with that tension, because on the one hand, this is a religious family that's trying to support good values, and yet they're forced to lie. And those lies end up hurting the family in many ways, as we see in that finale. And I'm sort of just made a comment here, but I'd also like your response, because I think that's a very important theme in the show, the way in which we as the mainstream society force people to lie because of what we will not accept or look at. And then also, I think it is hypocritical on the part of the show, because hypocritical on the part of the church, because they lie about polygamy in the past all the time. And so to say that this is that modern polygamists are somehow deceptive and bad, and yet they themselves will not tell the truth about their past, we have a real problem here.
Yeah, I mean, that's why so many of these statements are ironic. But I think the most poignant, and I can relate a lot of them to you that really touched me and made me cry, was and I can't even remember when it came now, but at one point, Nikki runs into the house, or maybe it's after the, yeah, it is. It's the finale, because she and Margene, because they can't go to the event at the Capitol, they go to a restaurant and have dinner, and they're having this wonderful conversation. They get the call. So the next thing you see is Nikki running into the house, hysterically running from window to window, shutting all the window blinds. They're going to come for us. They're going to come for us. We're going to, And she really has to be comforted and calmed down, because this is her experience coming out of Colorado City, is that, we've been found out. And I really think our cultural memory is so short about polygamy. And that's what I meant when I said, if we humanize them, that really, we really don't want to go back to Mormonism is really enjoying a new kind of legitimacy and power in the public and all different types of public spheres now. And so we don't want to go back to remembering. We don't want to remember what that was like, to worry about people coming for us. So I don't know if that Margaret, that's such a wonderful question. But there is that theme of lying, that having to live that way causes fear. And it usually is a fear that's this kind of primal fear, that I know the lies that I've told in my life are based on fear of being found out, of being terrified of anyone knowing who I really am. And so I think that's not unique to Mormonism, but I do think because of the emphasis on communal identity, and there being, I used to argue to my students that, the main premise of my course is that Mormonism is not monolithic. There's not a monolithic Mormon identity, but I'm ready to concede that really we've been headed that way. And of course, that's going to, because we're not all that and it's going to breed fear, and it's going to breed more and more lying, personal lying, and challenges to personal integrity. So,
the term lying has always been very offensive to me. When I was a little girl, my mother says, well, if you want the truth of the story, ask Anne. And I really have tried to be an honest person. So when my husband and I were seen together by people in the ward, he would walk one way and I'd walk another way, and we'd just call it playing games so that they didn't know about our lifestyle. This is one of the reasons, because society and laws have forced us into somewhat of an isolated state, we would like to see this decriminalized. We are not, we meaning most of my friends, would not like to see it legalized, but we would like to see it decriminalized and have the criminal penalty removed from the living of that law. Then we would not have this problem with lying or playing games.
I want to, speaking of the conversations that it brings up and the lying, I'm going to say something now that all the men in the room are probably going to hate me for as soon as I say that. But I love conversations, so I'll just bring up anything whenever I'm talking to people. But it's interesting if I'm with three or four friends, married couples, and we're all sitting around together, the men and the women, and the subject of polygamy comes up, all the men are like, oh my gosh, taking care of more than one wife, oh my goodness, that would be terrible. Oh, you know, and oh, I'm glad that was done away with. But if it's just me and four friends hanging around and somebody says, what about polygamy? They're all like, yeah, wouldn't that be great? So, boy, I wonder when that's going to come back, and you know, and I'm not letting my wife pick my wives; I'm picking them myself. So, I just thought it might be nice to out all of us. So, or
I'm interested that a couple of references have been made to the fact that the Hendricksons are a religious family, and I've watched it pretty closely, not as closely as some of you have, but I don't really see the role that religion is playing in their polygamy. Bill came from a Colorado-type environment and left it, and he doesn't believe in that existing patriarch. Nikki is the daughter of the patriarch, and she's sort of tied into it. But they don't seem to have any outward religious, other than praying around the table and living this principle, they don't seem to show any religious connection to what they're doing. And you mentioned that you don't belong to any groups, any religious groups, so yours is an independent kind of polygamy. Is it also, do you nevertheless see it as very religiously oriented, that you're doing it because of religion, even though you're not connected to a religious community, and they don't seem to be either? And then also, just with reference to the lying, lying seems to be part of the human condition, and they certainly, even though they're trying hard, several references have been made to the lying that goes on even in the family, that they lie to each other about their intentions, the wives wanting to get more time with the husband, and Nikki spending all her money and not telling anybody about it, and so on. So that's just part of the human condition, even though they are trying hard to be a loving family.
Yeah, it's important to realize they're human too, and they have foibles and weaknesses just like monogamous families. This is one of the criticisms I think Mary and I have talked about, that it does not bring out the religious aspect of plural marriage as much as we would like to see. As independent fundamentalists, it doesn't mean that we do not have a very strongly based religious lifestyle. This is, after all, the very basic reason why we are living it. It is a strongly held religious belief. We might exercise that in different ways, however. We might get together with our own family, we might meet with other families, so the people in groups have meetings on Sunday. The Hendricksons, I'm hoping they have some kind of a religious service on Sunday amongst their own family, but that isn't portrayed. And so I feel that is a weakness in the show. I'd like to see more of it.
Hi, I'm a fan of Big Love too. I'm Doe's son. I just want to say that I agree with what's been said about that in the LDS Church, I think our past is shrouded and put under a veil and, I mean, lied about basically, but I feel a majority of church members. I mean, I've had experience at EFY 2 years ago. I met kids, teenagers that we had a conversation about Brigham Young and Joseph Smith and the big lie and of polygamy, and they were, I mean, I said Joseph Smith had so many wives or whatever, and they said, that's a lie, you know, that's just the stereotype, and that's the big lie that publicity tries to tell everybody. But I've met kids that they think that if you're not Mormon, then you go to hell. I told these kids, I said, so you think that Gandhi went to hell and Buddha went to hell? And they said, yes, he wasn't Mormon. He doesn't have the gospel in his life. Maybe if he is baptized in, heaven, then he will, whatever. And I just think that it's gone from trying to not talk about our past to telling children lies. And because these kids, they've been taught this by their ward leaders, their family members, and I don't know, I just think it's gotten ridiculous. But I also had a question for Anne, and so I apologize, Mary. In one of the episodes, there was this one of their family friends who's also a polygamist, and he came to Barb and said that he is thinking he doesn't believe in polygamy anymore, and it was amazing that it seemed to them it was as much of a shock as if somebody in the LDS community said, I'm leaving the church. And I thought that was really fascinating, because I had never thought of it that way. So I just had a question, if it's that, that much of a shock, if it's the same for...
It would depend on families, obviously, but yeah, I think it would be a shock, especially if you felt like that person believed. But it is not unheard of. Also, we do have experiences where some of our children grow up and choose other lifestyles or other religions, and family or friends. My brother is an atheist, and I have two siblings that have gone into the mainstream church. So I'm the black sheep of the family. So.
Which is, Misha's comment was great. I just thought it was absolutely fantastic. I think, actually, I'm surprised. Most Mormon kids I know, if you were to say, what do you think about Buddha and Gandhi, they go to hell, the response you'd probably get would be, who? That's what I think. This is a real problem, and I want to tell you, I'm going to talk fast because I want to hear what Paul has to say, too, but... I was involved. Some of you have watched the church things. As an actor, I got involved playing Oliver Cowdery in this church historical series about and it was a great experience. But I had one experience that I never forget, because being a church history buff, and I want to know everything there was about Oliver Cowdery, and I had already been studying everything about Joseph Smith. And I got on the set one day when we were doing these scenes about the translation of the Book of Mormon. Oliver's trying to do it, and they wanted me to do it a certain way, and I was saying, guys, this isn't the way this went down, I feel a little weird doing it the way that you want me to do it, because it's not accurate, it's not real at all. And there's little conversations off the set, and there was the guy named the client who was off in the corner, and the client being some guy from they call him the client. It's like, what is this? He's some guy from the church office building, the client. And it went back and forth, and I was starting to get, being one of these belligerent, difficult actors about it. And finally, they just came back and said, do it the way that we said. And I said, why? And they said, we don't want to raise questions in the minds of the youth. And I was just dumbfounded. I said, I thought that's what education was all about. I thought that's what we're doing here, is trying to educate them. And I went ahead and did it. I couldn't, I had signed a contract that I was going to do it. And I'm proud of my work in those films, but I'm very concerned about something, because when these kids get, when they start getting information, Joseph Smith did have all these wives, or as adults, even if they manage to stay in their hole until they're 40 years old, and then they start learning these things that the church has been telling them, and the sense of betrayal when you go out and say, that's not true. You even go out publicly. We had a guy on the radio show come up and saying Joseph Smith had only one wife and her name was Emma, and all I could feel about this guy was, man, he's headed for a brick wall. That's gonna be tough. And I just feel like it's counterproductive to go about teaching our history and our doctrine the way that we've been doing it, because sooner or later people are going to come up against the historical facts, and when they realize they're getting those facts from often antagonistic sources, but when they go into it and they realize the antagonistic sources are the ones that are telling them the truth, and the church that they have trusted and that they have given their lives to in many cases has been lying to them or refusing to give them all the information, and they've been basing major life decisions on incomplete information. The sense of betrayal is very difficult to overcome, and many of my friends have left simply because of that. Because how do you believe the person that's been lying to you? How do you keep believing the person that's been lying to you, even if their motives were good? It's wonderful to see Misha having a brain. It's great. Thank you.
Well, I watched it with my daughters and my wife, and I close my eyes during this. And they say, open them up, you might learn something, right? And I said, I might remember something, but I don't know. What's curious to me about the show is the conflict element in the drama, which is a conflict among the wives and a conflict between the husband and the leader of the cult. And I say cult because, I mean, that's maybe not fair, but he is pretty a rotten guy, Roman. You know, he's pretty evil. Melodramatically so, but I think that helps people to kind of see that right away. But the conflict that I see that really happens in polygamy, and incidentally, I want to say that I agree with you, Anne, 100% for the decriminalization of polygamy, but not its legalization. I think that's a very intelligent position, and I agree with it wholeheartedly. But I think the conflict that's expressed in the show may miss, and maybe I didn't pick it up, but it may miss the real conflict, which is in the church and in the polygamous groups, and that is the conflict between the state and the requirements of God. That's the moral dilemma that I think causes people to lie. Because why would people go into polygamy, and I'm not a proponent of polygamy at all, but why would people go into this form, which is definitely criminal, unless it was because they believed they were following some mandate from God, unless it's sick men who want to marry underage women, which is a different story altogether. But what would be, and this conflict is not really clearly yet identified in the story, because I think the people who go into polygamy for other than the purpose of molesting young women is because they feel of the mandate of God, which goes against the state. And this is the reason why the church had this dilemma. It was do we follow God, do we follow the state? And very embarrassingly, the church capitulated on what it believed to be a commandment of God and has never been able to come to terms with that capitulation. Because no matter which way you turn in its capitulation, it seems like it either shouldn't have done it in the first place, or it should never have given it up, and what do we do? So this is not in the show yet, or maybe I've missed it, and maybe you could maybe comment on it.
I think indirectly maybe that was brought out a little bit, that it was against the law. I would like to say that it was against the law in the five states that Joseph Smith lived in, too. And he had to make that decision. Do we obey the laws of God, or do we obey the laws of man? That's been an eternal question, as far as I can see, because they do not always agree. And that's what we have to decide. Is it more important for us to live how we understand the laws of God are, as an eternal law, or is it more important to abide by the laws of the state? The way we reconcile that is that we feel that plural marriage is a law of the gospel, which is an eternal law, and the church can accept or reject that law. And it has done that. It accepted it in 1852, and it rejected it in 1890, but even though many of the leaders of the church lived it until 1904. So it's just an eternal conflict and a decision that individuals have to make, the law of God or the law of man.
I'm frustrated because there's not enough time to go into this. I have two concerns. One, as a feminist and as someone who's never married, I feel in this conversation conflicted in the same way that I do when I am in conversations about pornography and women. And feminism for me is about the equality of achieving that equality among and for women and giving them choices and rights to choose. So I feel very conflicted about the whole concept and issue of polygamy itself in the empowerment of women. I also, as someone who's studied a great many Mormon women's autobiographies from the previous generation and seen the difficulties of being a sister wife and living within that tradition, and it wasn't necessarily the kind of supportive situation. These women were living the life I live in many ways as a single woman out in the prairie, and a man not having the resources that Bill has. I don't know where he gets all his money from or all of that, and I haven't seen all of the episodes, etc. But so I have that concern, and finally, I have concern about men's silence on this issue, that it often becomes a conversation between and about and by women, and men are not speaking that their positions very clearly. I think that Big Love is trying to show in some ways the challenges for men, but I'm very curious about how and why men are silent in a way, and why we have one man and all of these women continually on these. Why is it that Richard is the only one participating in one sense? We've had some questions and et cetera, but I'm really curious, much more curious, deeply curious about men's experience, and you don't see them addressing that in their own autobiographies and such, but it's a primary concern in women's writing. So that's my final comment.
First of all, I want to thank you for that comment. I think that's really, really interesting and worth discussion and worth thinking about. We don't have a lot of time. I think that many of us who sincerely strive to live this way, of course, do consider ourselves endeavoring to live in a way that is equal and that does consider the rights of the women as well as the men. I've always viewed the polygamous relationships as a balance, a very gentle, and it's not necessarily gentle, but it's a kind of a delicate, fragile balance between dyadic relationships and the communal relationship of the entire family. Each individual dyad, there is equality between the husband and the wife over their family, their children, and then the communal relationship, hopefully there's equality, but obviously it's a balance, and it's a balance that each family has to strive for and try to make on its own. Sometimes that balance tips, and it's very imbalanced. I would say that a lot of the reading of the journals, I've done a lot of reading of the early Mormon journals as well, and especially of the women, because I've been very fascinated and feel a personal connection to them, living polygamy today. We are dealing with some of the same situations, considering the fact that it's against law. You cannot live openly. Some of that is going to have repercussions and consequences on your life. It also brings challenges into your life that, if we had acceptance and openness, would not be there. The reality of it is, I did not personally find polygamy to be so challenging that I was miserable every day. There were moments of jealousy with my sister wife, just like when I was a little girl, there were moments of jealousy with my siblings. I mean, you deal with it. It actually was pretty normal to me. I would be living it today, but she came from outside the culture. She didn't have the support system that she felt she needed, and she left. I would still live it again, myself, if we found the right person in the right circumstances. I personally think for some people, it can be done and can be done well, and can be a healthy environment, and for some it isn't workable. But I would love to go into more detail with your comments, but I really enjoyed them. Thank you for sharing.
We'd like to thank our panelists today, Ann Wild, Mary Batchelor, Richard Dutcher, and Doe Daughtry. Again, thank you. Again, tapes will be available if you want to order this session afterwards. Thank you.